Hello, gamers and noobs. Welcome to the third episode of the Noobology Podcast. I'm Mav and I'm joined by...
By me, Ashil. Really glad that you guys are joining us for our third episode. Hope you guys are well, that you're comfy, that you're cozy, that you're settled in, that you're ready for a really exciting and engaging conversation. Hope you guys enjoy. And yeah, let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Noobology Podcast. As always, I'm Mav, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you?
Hello. I'm pretty good, but a bit under the weather due to the recent fluctuations in weather, because it was a bit hot and cold. Yeah. But otherwise, I'm good. Looking forward to getting into today's episode. How are you doing?
I'm well. We are recording on a Sunday again due to load shedding, a thing that happens in South Africa where our electricity gets cut for about 2 to 3 hours. So we're doing it on a Sunday again, which is quite cool. I prefer
Sundays.
We are
saving the world.
Yeah. So should we get into the meat of this episode and talk about our new segment, which is the Noob Scoop, where we give you the latest news and updates in the gaming world? Ash, I saw the Ghost of Tsushima gameplay. Have you seen any?
I have. I've been watching this game since 2017. Right. To those of you who don't know, it is a PlayStation exclusive, and it's about samurais. Samurais are back in fashion. They're cool again.
Yes, it is a PlayStation exclusive. It has released this past week, and a lot of people are sharing their experiences. I've seen about an hour and a half of gameplay from the lucky people who gets it early, and it looks absolutely stunning. I know that, Ash, that you're reading a book right now about samurai culture. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I am.
Before we jump into the game?
Yeah, so I'm reading a book by Miyamoto Musashi, is his name, and it's called The Book of the Five Rings, also known as the Book of the Five Spheres. So it's basically a book by a Japanese Ronin. Now, a Ronin, if you don't know what a Ronin is a masterless samurai. So I started reading the book just to get into the frame of mind for the journey ahead, to get my mind ready for the experience, to focus a bit more. And it's really cool. It's basically a guy that won over 50 duels. So he fought other people and bested, I think the number 60 actually. So yeah, he bested 60 different challenges in sword fights. And the last one he had when he was 29. And up until the age of 50, he was practicing martial arts and developed his own philosophy and wrote it out on scrolls. And it's very cool. If you read and you enjoy reading and you do enjoy samurai and the culture, I think that this will be something for you to check out.
Awesome, man. I saw the book cover on Instagram and I was instantly intrigued. And that's why I had to ask you a little bit more about what the book is about. So Ghost of Tsushima, just a little bit of information. If you don't have the game yet, don't worry. We're not going to spoil this episode for you. But there is a few cool features I thought.
Yeah, there's no spoilers yet because I also want to play it.
There's a cool features that I thought would be interesting to share. So when you get the game, you have the option of changing the audio to Japanese. But however, beware, because a lot of people have been complaining that the audio, kind of the dub, is not that great. Check it out. You can even switch it during a game. So if you started off with Japanese audio, you can switch to English while you're playing. And another cool thing is that there is a mode, Ash, I think you know about this, but there's a mode in the game where you can change the...
Kurosawa,
that's right. The black and white mode. For those of you who don't know, Akira Kurosawa was a director of samurai movies in the 90s. He's done a bunch of great movies. You guys should definitely check him out after this episode. And another thing I just wanted to add is the game... without giving it too much away, I thought when I watched the gameplay, the game looks incredible, man. The kind of cinematic pieces and the landscape design,
beautiful.
It is so beautiful. It like kind of drops you right in that world of that culture, the samurai culture, the world. I mean, that I can't wait to play it. Ash, any thoughts from your side?
Did you know that you, an actual gameplay mechanic is for you to take a moment, sit down, look at the environment, and then write a haiku?
I did not know that.
I mean, if you look at the duality of the character, if you look at samurais in general, on the one hand, they are peaceful individuals, they enjoy art and poetry, but then the second, they can switch to becoming one of the most ferocious and violent warriors. And I think that's cool. And the game is likened to an artwork that is interactive and playable. And I think it's something that people have to see to enjoy, because I've watched a lot of YouTube and a lot of creators have posted videos, reviews and stuff about the game. But one thing that everyone says is that once you boot it up in your own system and you play it, it's something else. It's a whole new experience. And I think it's exactly what we needed, because if you look at all the other Japanese sword fighting games, you look at Nioh and Sekiro, it's not like a realism or realistic rendition, because there's lots of folklore and myth and creatures and stuff that's in the culture, that's in the games. So I think this one is a bit more boots on ground, if I could use that word. But yeah, it's beautiful. It's definitely something that I'm looking forward to getting, and I will be playing soon.
I did play Sekiro, but it was incredibly hard, and I agree with you there. It wasn't an accurate display of that culture, the samurai culture, and it was very different from, it's very different from Ghost of Tsushima. If you are going to buy it, it's not similar at all. They have two very different games. Some of the landscapes, I think, are inspired by each other. I don't know if you saw, there's the first boss fight scene in Sekiro is kind of like the same, the flowers, the plants, whatever, it's the same cinematic you see when you boot up the game in Ghost of Tsushima. It's like right there.
Really?
But that's cool. I think what they're
The devs flew out to Tsushima, to the island.
Yes.
And I think they based, I'm sure that the topography and, is it topography? Yeah, of the land and the area and the geographical locations will be similar, because it is based in Japan. But yes, that does make it very cool.
For both games, the environmental artists were amazing. And hopefully we can get one of them on the show, if you're listening. We'd love to have you on to talk about it.
Yeah, if you're out there and you are keen to be featured on our show, please get in touch and we'll reach out to you. And if you listen to this part of the episode, this is where you you give me a high five virtually.
Ash, I want you to ask you, are you going to get the digital version of the game or the kind of disc version?
I have not decided yet, because I think that there's a lot to think about. Well, for me personally, when I decide on a game, price is a factor. Yes, because I'm not as rich as I like to be. I'd like to have a couple billion in my account, but that's not there yet. So generally, digital games are cheaper. But at the same time, if you want to create space on your system, or if you want to lend the game to a friend, then you're going to have some issues. But I think we'll get back to that just now. But for our news, there's something else that was really major that dropped recently. And that was Far Cry 6. So I think, Alice, did you see the trailer? Did you check it out? What do you think of it?
I loved it. I watched the Ubisoft, what's it called? Ubisoft Forward. That was the kind of E3 conference that they had, where they showcased their gameplay and we got to meet some of their devs. It was pretty cool. When they showed the trailer for Far Cry 6, I was blown away. I love Giancarlo Esposito. I don't know if I pronounced that right. I'm very sorry if I butchered his name, but I loved him. I loved him in Breaking Bad. I loved him in The Mandalorian. I think he's going to do a fantastic job as the kind of villain. Yes, I'm really looking forward to see his performance and what he brings to the table. I think we have seen a lot of great performances over the years from amazing actors, but this one is worth looking forward to. Ash, what are your thoughts on the game?
Well, when I first saw it, I was blown away because it's gotten to a stage now where games are looking very photorealistic. And it looks like it is real, but then like it's something that's just missing. It's a bit off, like it looks too clean. And that was there in trailer. So it was a bit freaky for me because if you look at it, it's almost, it's actually very lifelike. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the performance. There are a couple of theories going around saying that the kid is Vaas. And if you guys played Far Cry 3, then you remember the definition of insanity. So I think it could be him because they do share a scar that's very similar. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This is the first Far Cry game that I am looking forward to after 3, I think. Blood Dragon was like the last one that I played because I think
did you play 5? Did you play Far Cry 5?
I did play 5. And it's a funny story behind that. So what happened was I wanted to get God of War. And now God of War just came out. So I was looking at prices and I came up with a scheme. I think it's genius. It could be a bit odd to some people, but yeah, this is what I did. So I got Far Cry 5 for about $500 and I was looking for someone to swap the game with. And there are a couple of WhatsApp groups and stuff in Durban that trade PlayStation 4 games as a commodity. So what happened was I met the guy, I swapped Far Cry 5 for God of War. And yeah, so the first month that God of War came out, I basically got the game at half price. And that was really cool. Because Far Cry was good. I was deciding whether it was good enough for me to get the gold edition. Because having played the DLC in all the DLC in Far Cry 3, because there's co-op, there's Blood Dragon, there was the... I think there was one more that I can't remember at this time. But yeah, it was very cool. And it was, I think the game looks amazing. I think after a certain point that the game started to look really cool, but it was a bit boring for me because the gunplay mechanics, it just felt like it was a bit repetitive. It might just be me because I played lots of first-person shooters, but the magic wasn't there.
I love it. Honest reviews right here on the Noobology podcast. I quite enjoyed it. Just the performances from the cast was excellent. I don't know who they are. Sorry, guys. I'm not sure who they are, but the father, when I played Far Cry 5, he was terrifying for me. So I really enjoyed the kind of cinematic part of the game. I agree with you. Gameplay sometimes fell flat. I felt bored running from one end to the other. But yeah, I agree with you. There's some parts where it does get a little bit tedious, repetitive.
I think because the opening sequence was a bit weird because I felt underwhelmed because you are hanging out of a car, you're shooting things, they are exploding, you are driving, trying to get away, and then things are exploding left, right, and center, but it doesn't feel like there's any bearing to the world. It just feels like it's there for the sake of being there, like a hot, like the Fast and Furious movies. Like, basically, it's just the quality, like DNA. If you played Far Cry 2, then you know that it was very gritty. It was something that was morally challenging. And there was one thing that happened. This was weird for me. I was playing Far Cry 2. And there was a mission where you need to kill a president or a king. I think it was a king. So what happened was I was playing the game on the hardest difficulty for some reason because I wanted to enjoy the game, but I didn't think it was going to be so hard. So I played the game, and when things get too hectic for you, you have friends that are NPCs, but they come to your rescue and they bail you out. They revive you if you go down, and they basically help you in the firefight. So one of my friends did come and rescued me and saved me. And then he got injured in the process. So I didn't have any meds to heal him, because if they get knocked or they go down, then if you have a syringe, then you can inject them and you can bring them back up. But I didn't have one. So a prompt came up and I pressed it without thinking what it was. But it's a prompt to shoot your friend. So you put them out of their misery by shooting them. And then a trophy popped up that said, "Good night, sweet prince." And yeah, it was a bit, I wasn't ready for that. It just came at me out of nowhere. And then later on, I realized, hey, I could have just used a syringe and brought the guy back. So yeah, that was something that happened. And it sticks with me till today. Mouse, do you have any gaming experiences like this? Any moments that you'd like to share with us?
I don't have any moments specifically with Far Cry. But there's moments where I felt pretty stupid playing with a friend, especially with Apex. I just started it and, I just started it like 3 weeks old into the game. And there's times where I kind of do a stupid thing. I run into a kind of like a warehouse and I'll just die. And sometimes people will be following me because they'll see loot. So I just feel so stupid. I'm like, I'm so sorry, dude. If you can hear me through this microphone, I'm really sorry. But yeah, no, that's the only moments I have. Nothing specific to Far Cry, unfortunately. In other news, for all our Xbox fans out there, our Xbox noobs, the date for the Xbox Showcase has been dropped. It dropped this past week. Ash, have you seen it?
I have not. I haven't really heard about that.
So it's titled
See the Future. No bias here.
No bias. Yeah, it's titled See the Future of Xbox. That's going to be on July 23rd at 9 a.m. PT. So that's roughly 6 o'clock our time in South Africa. Look forward to some new world premieres, new trailers, some updates to games we've already seen. That's cool. Apparently, there's a rumor going around that you'll get to see your first ever look at campaign gameplay from Halo Infinite. That's the new game that Xbox is releasing sometime soon.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to see what Xbox are going to be doing this generation. I think that there is a lot of room for improvement, but Halo is always a solid title for them. So yeah, let's see what they are doing with this.
Awesome, man. I can't wait. I'm going to be watching it. So guys, July 23rd, 9 a.m. PT, that's 6 o'clock our time. Mark your calendars. Moving on in other news, but it's not really gaming news. I just thought it would be worth mentioning. Tom Holland, the guy who played Spider-Man, you must have seen him in Far From Home and Homecoming in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, has started shooting Uncharted with Mark Wahlberg playing Scully, and he's playing Nathan Drake. And I have some thoughts about this, but Ash, I'd love to hear yours first.
I'm not so sure about this. Because have any game or movies based on games been good? I don't know. I don't think so. And especially with this movie, I think it was teased to be in production way back in 2012 and even before then. So I'm not too sure. I'm keeping my expectations really low on this one. What do you think?
I don't think Tom Holland, I mean, he's a great actor and I've seen him do other things as well. But for the choice of Nathan Drake, I don't know what they're thinking. I'm not sure what the script is. I'm not sure what they plan to do with this franchise, if it's going to be a franchise. But I always thought that they would cast Nathan Fillion, the guy who played Castle. He's on The Rookie or something. I'm sure you've seen him around. He loves the Uncharted. He plays it. He's a big fan of Nathan Drake. And he even did a short film. It's on YouTube. Search for it, you'll find it, directed by Alan Ungar. It was a short project that they did where Nathan Fillion played Nathan Drake and a few other cast members are there, Scully and someone else, I can't remember. Elena Fisher's there, sorry, slipped my mind. But I'm not sure about Tom Holland. I'm not sure, man. It's a weird choice. It's just a weird choice for me.
I think we're just going to have to wait and see how this one plays out. But I did see the fan film and that was amazing.
Man.
He did look a bit clumsy as Nathan, I think, but otherwise he was exactly what I'd picture.
The the part where he jumps out of the window, and the camera pans up to third person gameplay. That was awesome. That scene blew my mind.
Have they made any third person movies?
What, like games to movies?
Yeah, like the camera angle, because I remember way back when I was a lot younger. I'm saying younger, but I'm not really that old now. But anyway, Cloverfield, the first one. One of the first movies that was shot in first person. So the guy had a camera, he ran around the city. It was annoying to watch at times because of the shaking going on. And, well, it was strapped to his wrist, so you can imagine with all the panic and things going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool to see that. And then I think with camera work, God of War took God of War 2018. The one shot camera for the entire game was incredible as well.
That was awesome.
Back to movies and gaming. I'm not too sure about this one. I don't know.
I don't want to divert too much, but I will say, Ash, I don't know if you can jump in here, please. I'd love to get your opinion. But how did you feel about the Resident Evil movies?
Well, when you watch them, they were great. Mm. And if you had to go back and watch them now, it's just something that, the movie was like this. Because, okay, I'm a very tough critic on movies because I like to enjoy the movies. This one, it doesn't do it. I watched the last one on Netflix, I think about 2 months back. And yeah, it's not a movie I'd recommend to anyone. Okay, wait. I think, let me just say this, there is an exception for games. Wolverine. X-Men Origins Wolverine, that was a movie. But they did make a game for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, I think. That was cool. That was a proper game. That's
You're right.
The one with Deadpool at the end at the towers. Did you play that?
I did. Actually, great point, because a lot of people were saying that there's a curse when you try to make games into movies. They should do it the other way around. They should make movies into games.
Yeah, they should. Assassin's Creed did do that, but it wasn't...
Oh, please don't go there. That was a horrible movie. I mean, I love Michael Fassbender, but horrible movie. Horrible, just not great at all. I didn't enjoy it. I played the first three Assassin's Creeds, and I loved Desmond's arc. When they tried to do it with the movie, it fell flat.
The inconvenient truth here is that the directors don't really engage with the games as much as the players do.
True.
Because I think that they're professionals at what their job is, and gaming isn't really what they do. So they get a brief and they can research it, but I'm not too sure. I think that, let's direct a movie. So if anybody's listening, you have a studio, you have a budget of a couple million dollars, and you are willing to take a chance on some South African creative people, we are in for it.
I'd love to.
But there was a movie that was actually good, though. Prince of Persia. It was better than most.
Was that the one with Jake Gyllenhaal? That was good. That was a watchable movie. A watchable movie, I would say that.
Yeah, I mean, even here, to go back to there and listen to it and watch it, and it won't be cheesy. Well, as cheesy as the others.
Mm. The other movie that I found that was watchable for gamers out there was Tomb Raider, the 2018 movie. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Did you? What's your thoughts on that? Not good.
No, it wasn't. I respect what they tried to do, but I don't think that Alicia Vikander is a good enough Tomb Raider.
Agreed.
Sorry, not sorry.
okay. That wraps up our noob scoop for this episode.
Okay, that turned into a Sunday more than a scoop, and I'm sure it was cool.
A Sunday on a Sunday. dry jokes right here on the Nerdology podcast. So Ash, why don't you tell us a little bit about the topic today that we chose?
Okay, so we are going to deep dive into the social aspects of gaming, but it's not what you think. And I'm sure that everyone will have their own memories and stories with this one. So yeah, let's get into it without any further ado. We are going to speak about co-op gaming. Has it disappeared forever? Is it coming back? What memories have you had with that? And yeah, tell us, Mavs, do you have any golden moments, co-op gaming, things that you remember, things that you enjoyed?
So many memories, Ash. I don't know where to start, but one notable one that just pops into the head when you talk about this is when I'm originally from Durban, where Ash is right now. And I...
Yeah, before you got the accent, he was
in Durban. I was in Durban, yeah. I used to stay with my gran on school holidays. I used to go there. So yeah. I had about maybe 6-7 friends. We'd play soccer outside. And when I got a PS2, our lives changed. We went from playing outside, playing football outside, to playing football inside. I have so many memories where we booted up, what was it, Pro Evolution Soccer? Have you heard of that? I think they still make games. Yeah.
They are. I think that they got the news for making an update for the games instead of launching a new one. I'm not too sure about that, but yeah.
So we used to play knockout rounds where two kind of buddies will battle it out and then the next buddy will join in until someone wins. And that was the most stressful thing I've ever played. We'd make so much of noise. My gran would get so upset because we'd be disturbing her when she's trying to take a snooze upstairs. But I loved co-op gaming when I was younger. It was the best time. I think that's the only time I used my PlayStation. I didn't play any RPG or third-person games. I only played FIFA, Need for Speed. Oh, that was a big one. Oh, I used to love Need for Speed. I used to love beating my friends because I was so good at it. But they would whoop my ass in Pro Evolution Soccer. I was terrible. I wasn't great. They would beat me a lot. Oftentimes, they would make me go first in the knockout stages because they know I would lose instantly. But it was just great, man. That those memories, gaming, that formed my childhood, a big part of my childhood and a big part of my gaming life. How about you, Ash?
Yeah, I think that going back to when we were kids, we definitely make new friends playing FIFA and just having a guy's night. Now, what we used to do with my group of friends was we were split in different classes, so we weren't really close, but whenever we got the chance to play or set a date aside for us to hang out and play some games together, we'd do it and it'd be like a reunion sort of a thing. And we'd order food, we'd sit on the couch, we'd play some Call of Duty.
Nice.
Yeah, 4 players, COD, Black Ops 3, and even Modern Warfare. Modern Warfare was fun because I used to go around and torture the others because I would play shooters a lot more than everyone else. So it wasn't fair for them, but it was fun for me. But yeah, we'd hang out, we'd play, and we'd play FIFA as well. And we'd have knockouts, so we would randomly choose people to play against each other. And then if you lose, you're knocked out, then you play the person who won the other match. And yeah, it went on until we had an overall winner. And I think that's one of the things that is magical about gaming, because you can get together with a friend and interact and play against them and share an experience. Because besides the game days, I have a friend. Shout out to Fahim if you are listening. Yeah, so we would play Resistance, Fall of Man, and we'd play through, well, we actually played through a couple of games. We played through Resistance 1, we played Resistance 2 co-op, we played Resistance 3, we played Killzone 3, and there was a couple others as well. So we played the entire story of the game, Couch Co-op, and that was fun. And it was like one of our favorite pastimes, and we'd do that. And I had a neighbor that I played FIFA with, and he would beat me at FIFA all the time, which was a bit embarrassing, being player one but losing to player two. But yeah, I think it's something that we all have and we all share. We have that memory and experience with friends. And yeah, I think it's cool. It's a very important part of gaming. But is it now, is it gone? Is that, will the younger gamers actually experience that without having to log on to a server and meet their friends on a server?
I feel like it has disappeared. I feel like that, especially within this world we're living in now with the coronavirus, it's difficult to call a friend and say, come over, let's play on the couch, let's play some FIFA or some Need for Speed or some Resistance, Killzone, whatever the case is. It's quite difficult. I feel sad that the younger kids these days won't have that experience of not having the internet and just being in the moment with your friends, like communicating with them, just...
Yeah.
You know, what's, I think, what's funny is there were times where my PlayStation didn't work and we all would cross our fingers. And when you play, I don't know if you guys remember the old PlayStation logo. It like kind of has cubes running around, and then it zooms into the PlayStation logo. So we would wait for that because sometimes my PlayStation didn't boot up. And then when it did boot up, it was that moment of joy that we could celebrate together that, hey, we're gonna play some FIFA right now, some Pro Evolution Soccer. So there was those times like that. It's going to be so hard for them to experience the joy of gaming with your friend or your neighbor.
I hope it's not going to be a case. I think that it should definitely be something that's enjoyed by many. Because I think nowadays, if you want to have that experience, you're going to need two consoles and... two screens and all of that. But one thing that did happen a lot when playing couch co-op, especially in any versus mode, I think screen watching. So I look where you are and I look at your rectangle and see what you're doing, and I'll come to you.
Yeah. I remember that.
But people got creative with that.
They did? Yeah. Yes. I would die a lot when we would play first person shooter games because they would see where I am. And they remember the kind of building or shape or whatever I'm in, and they'll come after me. And I wouldn't know because I'm crouched, hiding like a coward, waiting to die.
Yeah, and there was a meme that I saw where these two siblings are playing together, but because it's split screen and they're playing against each other, they put a cardboard box separating the bottom half of the screen. So the one guy is sitting at the bottom and the other one is standing up. So you can't see the other screen because of the box. So that's really cool. That's, I think you did. Have you seen that meme?
I wish I was that innovative. And I have definitely seen that meme going around on Facebook. There was another one where, you know, when you're playing FIFA and Pro Evolution Soccer and it comes to the stage where you have to kind of play penalties against each other in order to win the match. I don't know if you experienced that. Right. Yes. So you got to be careful because the person next to you on the couch can see where you're about to shoot, right? So what we would do is we would turn the controllers to our sides, either sides of where we're facing, and then we would play it like that. I don't know if you experienced that, but that was hella funny for me.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We'd use a couch cushion to block the controller.
I wish I was that innovative when I was young, man. I would just turn around and then do it quickly, very quickly.
Yeah, I think those were the cool moments. Nowadays, I think we meet online, we meet on the server and in the lobby or something, and we just chill out together.
I will give a quick shout out to my friends over in Ireland who I play Apex with every weekend.
Yeah.
Andre and Vitek, if you're hearing this podcast, dudes, thank you so much for teaching me how to play Apex. Thank you for telling me what a shield cell is and what a Phoenix kit is and all of that, because I didn't know anything when I played the game. And yeah, man, you guys are super rad. They taught me how to play, and they're younger than me, which is insane. They're still in high school, and they taught me how to play Apex Legends. And they're in Ireland.
That's cool.
Things have changed. It's no longer call your neighbor, sit on the couch and play. It's who's in the lobby, let's make friends. After you play an Apex Legends match or Fortnite or PUBG, you send a friend request, and that's how you make friends now. It's difficult. It's different.
What What platform are you playing Apex on?
Oh, I'm playing on PlayStation 4.
Okay, we definitely need to get together sometime and have a session. I think
no, then we won't have a podcast because I'm terrible at the game. We will stop being friends.
Okay, wait. How much of a hardcore gamer are you?
Oh, I'm...
Do you think that you are one?
I think specifically the last 2 years, I've played PlayStation every single day without fail. After work, during weekends, I would call myself not a professional gamer. I'm not one of those. I am a hardcore gamer. I love games. If I can sink my teeth into an indie game or Apex Legends into an hour or two, I would do it, man. I love gaming so much. I know. Cool.
I describe myself.
You're a hardcore gamer for sure. That's the definition.
I'd say I'm an amateur professional player. Mm. Or professional amateur player. Yeah, whatever that means. But yeah, I do play very often, and yeah. I do enjoy myself a bit of Apex. I was playing ranked the other day and got two wins, so I'm happy for that. But yeah, it was in silver, so shout out to anyone playing Apex and on the higher ranks. It is a bit difficult to get up there, but yeah, we will do it someday. And Mams, I will introduce you to ranked when you are ready.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, man, I'd love to, because right now I'm playing with a few friends, and it's quite, I love Apex. It's much better than Modern Warfare, but yeah, let me not throw jabs at anything, at any game. All games are great. anyway, did you ever learn the game?
Great again.
Did you ever learn the game to your friend and they never gave it back to you?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. There was a time when I was big on racing games.
Mm.
And I think this is something that happens to everyone, because you, well, especially when you're younger, you lend in games to friends and you wait for them to bring it back, and sometimes you have their games and it's the same with them. But yeah, there was a couple of times that games didn't come back home, and I think one of them was Colin McRae Dirt. No, it wasn't Dirt, wasn't out then. It was Colin McRae 2. So it's that's back on PC. Funny story.
Yeah.
The first like modern game that I played was Need for Speed Underground 2. And I'm happy that I played that classic, because what happened was I would play PlayStation 1 games, and I think I was in grade 1, so I was like 6 back then. And then I would play, enjoy, but then I sort of like stopped gaming so much and moved to PC. And I don't think PC gamers lend their games as much as console players do. Okay, no, I think there's an exception if we think about piracy, which we won't really get into. I plead the fifth. Yeah, so... yeah, there were a couple of games that didn't really come back. But what about you? Was there? I hope it didn't happen to any of your favorite games.
Okay, so when I was younger, I had this Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets RPG game, PlayStation 2.
I don't like where the story is going.
It was. I think that game made me realize that I'm a big fan of third person and RPG games, and this game, like, I loved this game so much. But I was living with my mom and dad then, and we were renting a house in Shellcross, that's in Durban, for those of you who don't know. And I had a neighbor, his name is Clinton. He came home one day after school, saw me playing it, and he wanted to borrow it, and I did. And after a while, it just split my mind, and I started playing other games, and I forgot that he had it. He then moved to the UK, and this is going to be a long story, but anyway, he took my game, I didn't get it back, and then last year, I had the privilege of going to the United Kingdom for 2 weeks for work, and I hit him up, and I asked him if he still has my game, and his answer was a resounding No, dude, I don't have a game, but if you'd like a cup of coffee with me, I would love that. yeah, that game.
Well,
was...
I don't blame you for
exactly. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that has learned their favorite game, and they didn't get it back, and it's so frustrating because that's your friend, and you feel awkward to ask for the game back. Almost, it's like, I know it's my game, but I'm awkward to ask it because we have a friendship. That makes sense.
Yeah, so like the do's and don'ts of
exactly.
gaming etiquette. Return the game.
Return the game, one. Exactly. And even though I don't have a PlayStation 2 right now, I would still love to have that game. That's why I hit him up when I was there last year. And sadly, he lost it when he was moving. And I did shed a tear because it was such... It was the game. You know that game that defines you? It's like that game that makes you realize you love gaming. That was it for me.
Yeah.
And I know it's not the best game, graphics wise and all of that, and gameplay wise, but it was a great game to me personally. I loved it. So yeah, that's my short story on how I lost my favorite game. It moved away and then tried to find it years later and still didn't get it back.
Well, I do believe that story isn't over yet. So it could be something coming soon. We're just gonna have to see what happens, how this one plays out. I'm sure there might be a plot twist coming up. But yeah, I think I'd love to hear more from my audience, and I know, like, if you had some of the experiences, what was it, how did it happen, maybe get tag the person that has the game and we'll ask them.
But in truth, things have changed because now you can buy games digitally, and you know, you can't really. Can you share a game if you buy it on online? Is that possible?
I think you can.
Oh, really?
I think there's something called game sharing.
Oh, okay.
It's a bit tricky to do. Have you heard about it before?
No, I'd love to. I have never heard about it before, so please elaborate.
Okay, so for PlayStation, what happens is there's something called your primary console. So that's basically your home console.
Mm.
So if you buy anything, there's a license associated with the purchase. So let's use an example of Battlefield 1. I joined PlayStation 4 late, and so that was the first game that I bought because I bought the system for that. And I'm pointing to my console at the moment, which you can't see, but I'm doing it anyway. So yeah, so what I was saying was, if I wanted to let someone else play the game, now there's two options for PlayStation, and I do think no, Xbox doesn't have this. So PlayStation has SharePlay. SharePlay is, have you heard about that, Mouse, before?
Yeah, I've heard of SharePlay, but I've never used it before. I have heard of it, but never used it.
Okay, I've also not used it, mainly because bandwidth issues and internet isn't really reliable on this side of the world. But yeah, so what happens is you host a game. So my friend doesn't need to have the game. They just need a good enough internet connection to join my party and play the game with me. So I host it and I have the game, and you just join the game to play with me. So that was SharePlay. I hope that that does make sense, and anyone's listening, they do understand that. Then the other was game sharing. Now, this is going back to the PlayStation and your primary license and activating that. So what happens is, if you want to game share, you need to go to your friend's console and log on to your profile on their system. Now, only do this with someone that you trust, because usually there's card details and stuff with your account. So if they go to the store, they can buy whatever games that they want to and charge it to your card, and hopefully no one does that. So yeah, it is a bit of a danger, but anyway. So what you do is you give them your details, let them log on their PlayStation, and then they activate your profile as the primary profile on that PlayStation. Now, this means that you can't be the primary on your PlayStation at your house, but they can at their house, because they need to access your library of games. And if everything is set up correctly, then they can just go and see whatever games you have and play as you and download it and experience it. But I don't recommend doing this unless you really know what you're doing, because I think you can't be online at the same time, because it might kick you out of one of the system, because it's two concurrent logins. So that's, I think some games will ban you from doing that. So it's just something that is possible, but I don't think you really want to do it if you aren't keen on doing it. Microsoft also has a similar one, I think. I think it's the same principle.
But Microsoft? But
yeah, that was my...
What do they have?
Yeah. No, it's the same principle as game sharing on the PlayStation, where you need to activate somebody else's console as your primary profile so that they can have access to your library. Yeah, so that was my long-winded explanation. Hopefully it was communicated properly so that people can understand what I meant. But yeah, that's game sharing on the consoles. It is a bit weird, and I mean, especially with the rise of digital purchases and the exclusion of the disk drive on the next-gen consoles, it's going to be something that's might be a bit more commonplace, but I think Sony and Microsoft might have barriers or ways to stop you from doing that if they really wanted to.
I will say, please proceed with caution if you're doing any of these things, because like Ash said, someone will have access to your bank account. So please be careful with who you share your details with. Make sure it's someone you trust. And yeah, go from there. The other thing, I know whoever's listening to us, if you play on mobile, my cousins were telling me about this app called Share It. I don't know if you hear about it. Did you?
I have not. Okay, never heard of it before.
It's a iOS and Android app that kids use, or adults. I've only seen kids use it, but you basically can share games with the person for free. So if I download, I don't know if I'm explaining this properly, but if I download a tennis game on my phone, I can share it with you for free. You just get it from Share It, like Bluetooth, and then you play it with me.
You know what? I think that the console gaming market is a bit of a wild one.
Yeah.
Because there's emulators for many, many different things that you can run on your phones.
This is true.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty cool bit of advice, and I might use it sometime.
Speaking about sharing files and digital versus disk versions of games, interesting thing happened to me this past week. So a client paid me money for a project that I did, and I knew that that money was going to be towards The Last of Us Part 2, the game that I really wanted to play and we've talked about relentlessly in the past two episodes. So I don't know why, but I just felt that I would be better having the disc version, having it physically, like looking at Ellie on the front cover of the kind of the casing, and having it with me just felt a lot more personal to me than just downloading it off the Play Store, which would have taken me hours because the game is so freaking huge. So I went and supported a local retailer here who sells games. Shout out to BT Games in Mall of Africa. That's in Joburg. I went there and I bought the game there. And I don't know. It just felt for me like a very personal thing, because we both know that The Last of Us is a very personal game to me. The first one, and then you've also played it as well, so I'm sure it's personal to you. So and it just felt satisfying to hold the case in my hand and to buy it, you know, and to support a local retailer who's being hit with the coronavirus, by the way. So what are your thoughts on this?
Okay, from a business standpoint, if you buy a game from any digital store, then you aren't paying any distribution costs. Well, Sony isn't and Microsoft isn't. So that's why the games are marginally cheaper. So when you are going out to a store, the stores are making a profit and there's a bit more costs involved. Yeah. But I think there's more a sense of occasion when you get something from a store, it's a trip that you're going, you know, you're going into the store, you're going to pick up the game that you're looking forward to getting. And when you come home and you unwrap the plastic and open the case, I'm not sure if you smell the book, because some people do. it's the newness and
it's different, right?
The joy that you feel.
That's how I felt yesterday when I purchased the game. It was different. It was like I knew I was going to go on the Saturday, so I marked my calendar, whatever, and I went out and I bought it, and I knew I was going to buy it, so that the excitement was there.
Were you crossing the days on the calendar till you got there?
Well, I have a calendar for client work, for Crave client work, so I know
I'm just teasing.
Money comes in and stuff. So, yeah, I figured I was going to get it late in July, which I hated, but just going there and buying the game is a different experience than just sitting on the couch and looking at games and what's on special and just downloading it, man. It's different. So things have changed and I think it's going to change in the future, because PS5 is doing the discless version of a PlayStation, and Xbox is doing something similar. I think they've got the Xbox Series X, and they're releasing something called Xbox Lockhart, which is kind of like the digital version of Xbox. But yeah, man, that's...
Is it good? Is it bad? What do you think?
I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
There's a bit of a smooth reversal there. I think that it's a bit of both. I think that if it's more convenient for people to not go to a store and to save a bit on a game by getting it digitally, then by all means, go ahead. But I would hate to see the extinction of physical discs and distribution of that, because that would suck.
I will say, it's just branching off from your points, thinking about it now, like, I would hate to see game stores close their doors because people are buying games online. It would suck.
Have game stores become the evolution of what arcades were?
That is an excellent question. That is an excellent question. Yes. I say yes.
I say yes as well. But I think the culture has become a bit more specialized, because I think we moved away from the merchandise and the comics and basically all of the... I want to use the word nerdy, but not really, because it's a bit of a stereotype, but all the cool stuff is sort of grouped together all the time. But now it's a bit more specialized. And I agree with you. I think that it is, but at the same time, we need more modern day social clubs for gamers. I think we do.
Just looking at it from an economic standpoint, I think that yes, it's inevitable. As much as I would hate to see physical discs going away, it is inevitable, because it will be cheaper to buy the digital version of the PlayStation than buying the disc version. And I think that it would be really sad when game stores have to close their doors, because think about it this way. What's happening with the future of gaming is what happened to vinyls and music stores that used to stock albums. Now you can go on Spotify and download an album, or you can go to iTunes and get an album or song or whatever you like or want to listen to. So yes,
that is a very good point.
It's I'm glad you're with me, because it seems inevitable, because it seems like that's what we're looking at going towards, but it can be changed, because like you said, there were times where, you know, there was that feeling where you could go pick up a comic and there was arcade games and all that. If the question really is, can the retail stores that sell games kind of refine their business model and include more activities for gamers? Could you stock comics? Could you stock, you know, a coffee shop in the store, just so gamers can hang out and kind of talk about the games that they play today? I know some gamers are very introvert and like to stay at home and play with themselves, but there are gamers out there that want to socialize. So I think that it's inevitable. It might happen, but there are ways that you could avoid that. You could avoid it. You could.
Okay, now I'm looking at this from a business standpoint, and
go for it, because you're the businessman.
One thing that isn't really spoken about now in economics, when so there's basically an economic system, and when you save money, you are stopping the money from flowing in the system. So that's seen as a leakage in the system. Right. So that's why they encourage you to spend and all of that. Now, if you had to bring back to gaming and the gaming context, selling secondhand games. When you buy something that's physical and you resell it, Sony is not involved and Microsoft isn't involved.
Yeah.
And neither is the developer. So you are essentially cutting them out of that exchange. And if it was solely digital, then it would be a lot harder for that to happen. Because I think there was a bit of controversy with reselling digital stuff. Because, okay, so from a business point of view, it does really make some sense. Because, okay, so I did study economics for a short time. And one thing that was, one of the things that I picked up was, in an economic system, when you save money, it's literally viewed as a leakage in the system. So people encourage you to spend more and not save. Now, in a similar sense, when it comes to reselling games, the developers and the publishers aren't really involved in your resale. So it's just you who bought the game, selling to a friend or someone that you don't know. So there's no profits going back to the business that published and developed it. So I think with the increase of digital games, they would try to limit that happening. But interestingly, there was a court case in Canada back in 2019 where Valve were overruled by a consumer rights group. And they basically said that they can't stop you from reselling a digital game that you purchased, because they classified it as dematerialized games, which is a thing. And I don't know what it means right now, but it is a thing. But yeah, so you could resell your games. I'm not sure how that would work in a PlayStation and Microsoft ecosystem, because I think it's a closed loop. What are your thoughts on this?
That's a very interesting. I did not know about that that court case that you mentioned in Canada back in 2019. I'm on the fence about this, man. I don't know. Because on the other end, I think the term resale will fade away. And a lot of people will start calling it a trade-in, where you give a game in to a store or a friend and you take something back. So instead of reselling the content that belongs to a developer or a first-party studio or Sony or Microsoft, whatever the case is, you kind of trade the game in for another game. I think that will kind of will happen in the future. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm on the fence about it. So, yeah, I think from...
I mean, if you look at FIFA and Madden and NFL, it would make sense for you to trade in the game that you bought to get a discount. But I think they're making too much of money for them to worry about that.
I also do believe that a lot of people look forward to secondhand games, because if you go to a store, a retail store, I'm going to use PC Games as an example again. If you go to them and you trade your game in, they'll give you another game, or they'll give you a 20 or 50% off on whatever purchase you choose to use that on. So I like trade-ins because it helps from as a gamer, if I'm trying to save money for the next month or try to pay some bills, it helps. But reselling... Yeah, reselling a game, that's tricky water that I would like to stay away from, because on one hand, it's like, well, do you own the game? Because you're purchasing the game to play it, but Sony made the game, the developers made the game, so it's their content that you're using to play and experience, and now you have the right to sell the game. So I don't really know where I stand on it. It's because it's a bit tricky. It gets tricky.
Yeah, it does. But with tradings and stuff, I remember that I used to do something that I don't think is normal for gamers. So if I played a game that was like the second in a series of games, I'd go back and buy the first one to play the first one and experience that game. Right. So I did that for Battlefield Bad Company. And I actually picked up the gold edition. I think it was secondhand at BT Games, because I don't think any of the stores were actually carrying stock for the game. So I think that there is an argument to be made for the legitimacy of trade-ins and stuff like that. And yeah, it does make sense. But going into usage rights and all of that is something I don't think that I am well aware of enough to say. Same. I think I'm a bit ignorant when it comes to that. Yeah.
Same. I will say that the trade-ins I love, because it gives people who don't have enough money the chance to play a new game. Like yesterday when I was there, they had Jet Stranding, the new game with Norman Reedus, made by Kojima, on secondhand for, I think, gosh, please be the right price, $600-$700, and it's going for ₹1,000 on the PlayStation Store at current. So I mean, there's a lot of savings when it comes to it, but
yeah. So that's some very interesting points there, but I think we need to move along to our next segment of the show, which is Game of the Week.
Oh yeah.
What are you thinking? What are your thoughts? What are you recommending to our listeners?
Okay, so Game of the Week. For those of you who are in quarantine, lockdown, and you're craving an adventure of the outside world, I recommend playing the indie game made by Campo Santo, Firewatch. It is available on Windows, Mac, PlayStation 4, Xbox, and Nintendo. Just a little bit about the game. The year is 1989. You're a man named Henry who has retreated from your messy life to work as a fire lookout in the Wyoming wilderness. And that's all I will say. It is exactly as the title says, Firewatch. It is a brilliant game. You'll get sucked into the landscape. It's beautifully designed. It's very simple as well. It's first person, and it's very easy to kind of traverse around the environment and get a feel of the game. There's lots of stuff to kind of do there. The activities and the mystery around it is amazing, to the point where you'll have a lot of questions. And if you do, please reach out to us and we'll be happy to help you answer them. But yeah, man, that's my game of the week, Firewatch.
I think that this one is a very good experience. But while I say that, I didn't really play it, because I did research. No. I never really get into the game, which is odd, but I think I'm going to, because from what I've heard and from what you've said, it does really sound like a very good experience. It's one of those that like sneaks up on you and you don't really expect it, but it leaves you with a greater sense of appreciation for games and games that you play and experiences that you can have.
Agreed, especially if you're craving the outside world like I am. I played it again this past week. It's a short game. You can clock it in about 3 to 4 hours if you're really invested. But yeah, it's it just pulls into that world where it gives you that satisfaction of being outside. So highly recommend it. Ash, what is your game of the week?
Okay, but first, I haven't heard anybody say clock a game in a really long time. That was like very nostalgic for me. For me, my game of the week would be, for all you PlayStation trophy hunters out there, this game is 20 South African bucks, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and it is called My Name is Mayo. So, some of you might know, like the trophy hunters are a bit sneaky in the platinums that you get. I think, Maz, are you Googling the name? I heard the keyboard there.
Yeah, I am. I haven't heard of this game.
Okay, I'm not going to say too much, but it was fun for what it was.
You know what we should do, Ash? You should play Firewatch, and I will play My Name is Mayo this week, and then we can come back and kind of give a small, brief summary or review on the games we played. What do you think?
Yeah, it sounds cool. I'm up for
awesome. It. Awesome, man. I think that wraps up our third episode of the Neurology Podcast. This was a great conversation. Very nostalgic for me. Brought back a lot of memories. Ash, I hope you enjoyed this conversation.
Brother. I definitely enjoyed.
Yeah, man. I'm looking forward to our next one. We will be releasing episodes weekly going forward. We hope that you will support us by listening to this, giving it a like, finding us on Facebook. Please comment. And when we are available on iTunes, we will let you know and you can drop us a review. Ash, anything you want to add?
Yeah, please review us. Give us a 5 out of 5 or 11 out of 10 stars if it's possible. And yeah, we'd love to know what you think about our show and if you're enjoying it, things that you'd like to hear more on. And yeah, I think we have some room for improvement and some room for some exciting segments that we're going to introduce soon.
Awesome.
I'm going to stay tight lipped on that. But yeah, thank you for listening and have a good Sunday and enjoy.